our lives are to be lived wisely and worthily, they must be undergirded by wise and worthy principles. The highest and deepest principle of life is the principle of stewardship. This is the great regulative principle of life, the principle of stewardship of every talent and asset and resource that we have in life and of life itself. Paul states it for us in this oft-quoted sentence. It is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. The true meaning and mission of life are set out very markedly and comprehensively in this little word, steward. It is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Who is and what is a steward? He is not a principal or a proprietor or an owner, but he is one who has been entrusted with the affairs of another. From beginning to end, the Bible magnifies the principle of stewardship in its large reach and application. One thinks of Eliezer in the house of Abraham, his faithful steward. And one thinks of Joseph in the house of Potiphar, the faithful steward of Potiphar. And you recall in the account of his relations to Potiphar that the Bible tells us that Potiphar left all in the hands of his steward, everything pertaining to his house, and he knew not of any of it except the bread which he did eat as it was provided for him from day to day. Here then stands out the true meaning and the true mission of life. It is a stewardship. Every talent of life, of every kind, every asset, every resource is a part of our stewardship, and life itself. Life itself is one great commanding stewardship. Paul states the principle for us in the great word debtor. I am debtor to all men, said Paul, to Jew and Gentile, to barbarian, Scythian, bond, free, to people of my race and of every other, to people of my land and of every other. I am debtor to humanity. I owe myself to humanity. I am obligated to humanity. Paul put it in that great way. And Jesus stated it for us in many, many statements. One of his most impressive being, I came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give my life a ransom for the many. And his mission is ours. As my Father hath sent me into the world, even so send I you. We're to walk in his steps. We're to incarnate his spirit. We're to carry out his mission in our day and generation. About 100 years ago, the doctrine that was pronouncedly accentuated in great sections of the world was the doctrine of men's rights. Literature, something like 100 years ago, was permeated with that doctrine of men's rights. The French Revolution was an attempt to regenerate society on the purely secular doctrine of men's rights. It can't be done with that doctrine, men's rights. But if I shall be set over against it, the Christian doctrine of men's duties, of their obligations, then we begin to see the clear, true, certain meaning and mission of human life. Jesus marks faithfulness as the highest criterion of character. He sets out faithfulness as the supreme test of life. And Paul's word is in point and worthy of our earnest meditation today and all the days. Namely, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Great thoughts emerge from this simple but very far-reaching statement. We've time for meditation, briefly, on two or three of these thoughts today. And first of all, our stewardship, whatever it is, must be accounted for. Give an account of thy stewardship. It's the word of Jesus. It's the teaching of Jesus. The burden of the Bible, from first to last, magnifies that truth. You are to give an account of your stewardship. Must give an account. Mark that imperious word, must. There's no evasion. There's no avoidance. There's no neutral course possible. We must, every one, give an account of our stewardship, whether it be large or small, whether it be this or that. We must, every one, give an account of ourselves to God. We must have our reckoning with Him for the use or the abuse of life's privileges, life's trusteeships, life's stewardship. Now, this doctrine is the great regulative teaching of life. We build our lives on petty little rules. If we ignore this great doctrine of stewardship, all that I have and am and can be constitutes my stewardship in life toward men and toward God. And I must render my account for this stewardship. One can well understand how Daniel Webster would say that the most solemnizing thought that ever coursed through his mind and heart was the thought of his individual responsibility. Chief Justice Taft, a little before he went away to the great beyond, in one of his noblest utterances said, there is a relaxation of the sense of personal responsibility in this country which bodes no good for us, but which portends evil if we allow that relaxed sense of personal responsibility to go on unchanged. All stewardship, whatever it is, must be accounted for. Now, we are prone to think that in our little ordinary lives, it amounts to little or naught. We can think of great personalities that sweep through the world and fancy, certainly, they'll have a great stewardship to answer for. We can think of Napoleon, the Colossus, bestriding himself across great nations, carrying terror and horror for a long time in his awful march. And we can think of men since his time and of men now in the world whose behavior means a vast accountability by and by without any mistake. But we are to remember that in our little, everyday, ordinary lives, we are just as directly responsible to God as the mightiest personality who ever wrought and reigned and lived. Shaftesbury, that noble worker for humanity, tells us that he was most of all influenced in his life by a very humble servant woman. Her spirit was so glorious that it radiated constant challenge and inspiration to all who came within the radius of our humble life. And Henry Ward Beecher, probably America's greatest orator, unless perchance the chief one should be Daniel Webster, Beecher tells us that the most influential factor in his life outside of his own father's family was a plain Negro man, Charlie Smith, whose Christian spirit was so humble and high and worthy that every time he came anywhere within the radius of that humble, darkest life, he was challenged and called to higher, better living. One of the most artistic and worthy tributes paid by Beecher to anybody in all the great pulpiteer's lifetime was paid by him to this humble servant to whom I refer. You and I, in our little small sphere, must answer to God as verily as Washington must answer, or Gladstone, or the greatest and mightiest and most famous of us. We must every one give account of self, ourselves, to God. The account is to be a complete account. All our trusteeship, whatever it is, we must give account for our time. Quaint old Ben Franklin said, value time, for time is the stuff of which life is made. We'll give an account to God for the use or the abuse of our time. Men sometimes speak of killing time. I'm just killing time. Oh, what a horrible onslaught they're making when they're killing time. What do you do with your leisure hour? With your leisure hour? With libraries accessible? With great sources of information accessible? With night schools accessible, with all sorts and forms of self-improvement knocking at your door, what do you do with life's leisure hours? How terrible to kill time, to waste time, the stuff of which life is made. We'll answer for the use or abuse that we make of time. We'll answer for all of life's talents, whatever they may be. They're varied, they're diverse, they're widely different in different lives. We'll answer for all these talents, every one. Jesus spoke a parable to the people, the end that the five talents were given to a man, and two talents given to another, and one talent given to another. Take these now and trade with them, and make your report by and by. And after a while, the man with five talents came back and said, here, master, your five talents have made five more, of 10 talents. Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I'll make thee ruler over many things. And the two talented man came back and said, here, your two talents have doubled and made four. And he got exactly the same reward as was given the five talented man. Isn't that revealing? But the one talented man came and said, I was afraid, and I hid your talent in the earth. Here it is. And the talent was taken away from him and given to the man that had 10 talents. He forfeited it. He lost his talent and all that went with it of impermanent gain. He forfeited by unfaithfulness. Now in the parables of the talents and of the pounds and of all the teachings of Christ, the truth is written large, written as vividly as though it were written across the skies in living letters of fire, that our every talent must be accounted for. We're to see after our responsibility for our influence. Our influence is indestructible. The word you said a while ago is going on. Maybe it was a good word. Alas, it might have been a bad word. It's going on. It's loose. It's flying now, on and off. And the deed you did a while ago, maybe a beautiful, blessed, nobly unselfish deed, it will go on, fructifying and multiplying in power and blessedness. But remember, that bad deed is going on. That selfish deed. That ugly deed, it's going on. Here comes in the indestructibility of influence. No man liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. This influence goes on and on and on. These men that have trodden across the centuries with their destructive power, they must reckon with all the terrible accumulation of influences following in the wake of their behavior. That marvelous genius Napoleon, he said, they say that man proposes, but God disposes. And cynically he said, I propose and I dispose. And brushed with his proud hand the thought of God's providence away. But you remember when he made his fearful invasion into Russia, and the storms and the rains and the conditions physical were so terrible that his loss of men was appalling and his defeat terrible, he came back with head down, somewhat subdued, and said, God Almighty has been too much for us. And he is too much for any man that dares to gainsay him or to contravene his ways. He is too much. Victor Hugo said, as only Victor Hugo could say it, Napoleon bothered God. But men will not bother him for all, for aid. God will call the mightiest, the most famous in the world to account. And he'll call you and me just the same in our little lives to account for our trusteeship. Our influence is indestructible. Indestructible. What can we mean about careless? Oh, what can the careless parent mean? Job well reminds us, look how we live while the children are about us. While the children are yet about us, look how you live. Mark how you live while the children are yet around. Every time that our Lord lays a little babe on its mother's heart and on the young father into the young father's hands, he gives this divine commission, take this child and rear it for me. And if we fail at that vital matter, if we fail at that chief, incomparable matter, someday we may stand like David in the gate with utter brokenheartedness and wail out our cry as did he, O Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. I've heard that cry again and again in these 40-odd years I've lived in that. Let's see now about our trusteeship as parents. Let's see about our trusteeship as citizens. We may not, must not, dare not ignore our vital trusteeship as citizens. If there are bad conditions in the social order, you and I are measurably to blame. Let's see about our trusteeship, our stewardship. If you've officers that are unworthy in any realm, high or low, whose fault is it? They didn't elect themselves. They didn't promote themselves. The franchise of the people put them in that place. Let's mark well our behavior as citizens. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. When the wicked bear rule, the people mourn. But we put both in authority. Let's mind how we behave when comes the day when we seek to determine standards and leaders in the social order. Let's mind about our behavior. And then there's the trusteeship, not only of influence, in home life, in social life, in political life, governmental life, all life. Oh, there's the deepest influence of all in moral and religious life. Let's mind how we behave. Let's mind about our example. Gladstone never wearied of saying, one example is worth a thousand arguments. Ye are the light of the world, but if the light in you be darkness, how great is the darkness? Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is sent forth, good for nothing, but to be cast out and trodden under foot of man. Let's mind about our influence. And then I come to speak a word about our material property. We must answer to God for the use or the abuse of every piece of material property, large or small, that shall ever come into our hands. Material property, a man's material possession, a man's money. This is a part of his stewardship, of his trusteeship. What shall be said about this? Two or three things shall be said about our stewardship in the matter of material property. And first of all, let us see well to the methods whereby this property is acquired. This property is to be acquired righteously. And if it be not acquired righteously, then down the road somewhere, some shaggy prophet shall stand at the gate when we arrive there and say to us, that Naboth's vineyard that you've taken isn't yours. You're a robber and a thief. Our hands will be burned and our consciences burned if we get this property by unrighteous methods, by dishonest methods. And therefore it follows that every thought of shortcut gain, every specious scheme of gambling, plays the people down, enervates and deteriorates and injures beyond words. In this property we get, let's see that we acquire it righteously. I was felicitating one of our men on certain gains he had made in the world financial. And he thanked me and his face flushed, and then he said, sir, every dollar of it's a clean dollar. Well, it all better be clean. It all better be clean. You'd better no more trifle with these specious forms of gambling and think you can come out unburned, unhurt, than you can go into the den of serpents, wriggling and hissing and making their way for you and carry there with them as a resident with them and be unhurt. Let's mind how we get our property. And then when we get it, and as we get it, let's understand all along, this is a part of my God-given stewardship in the world. God has his eye on all of it, large and small as the amount may be. This is a part of my God-given stewardship. My stewardship that I cannot evade or avoid, however I may try. Here's a part of God's stewardship fund. Every bit of it now, I must remember, I'm a steward, as Eliezer was in the house of Abraham, or as Joseph was in the house of Potiphar. The Lord has entrusted, out of his blessing and providence, he's entrusted this to me. I mustn't trifle with it. I'm a steward with it. I must make the right use of it, the fullest, best use of it. That's the meaning of property. That's the meaning of property. The man who doesn't have that understanding of property has just missed it from A to Z.